Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Retro Gamers Podcast, episode number 242, I believe. Larry here.
And Anthony here.
And look at that. Is that a green screen?
That is not a green screen. I am finally home.
I don't believe it. Touch something.
Touch something. What do you want me to touch?
Oh, all right. Look at that.
It is real.
It is not chroma key.
100% real.
That looks awesome.
Unless I am chroma key. Well, impossible.
It is 2021 at this point.
That's very true.
Looking very good, my friend. That was really, really good.
Yeah, labor of love. It really was. But I am all set up in my new... Well, this is all set up in my new place. Everything that way. Can't say it's really set up yet, but I'm coming along. I really wanted to make sure I got this done for today, since it's my first official podcast in my new home.
Yes, congratulations, my friend.
Thank you.
So many castles, so many loans to pay off.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, I've now been relegated to a one-bedroom apartment.
Fair enough.
Stupid real estate.
Aw, but good to go.
Yes.
Cool.
And I found something very interesting really quickly.
Yeah.
I just happened to look over to the left here. So, and this is related. This is not related to the Retro Gamers. It's related to your other podcast, The Better Half.
Oh, okay. Weird.
A very long time ago, on I believe my first drive across country, your co-host over there, Frank, asked me to pick him up something.
Shocking.
And I picked it up for him. And just to talk quickly, like, I had it at my mother's house because when I drove back to LA, to New York in 2014. And it went missing, and then it went missing, and I'm like, okay, he didn't know about these, I don't think. So went missing. I wound up, and then a year later, I went back to LA. So they were just kind of lost in the shuffle. Fast forward like a few years later, I found them at my mom's house in New York when I was visiting or something. So I'm like, oh, cool, I got to give them to Frank. Never had the opportunity to do it. They wound up kind of in a bag, like drawer, and now they have gone cross country, I think like three times. And now that I'm unpacking here, they popped up again. So I just want to point out, because it is my plan, my responsibility to make sure that Frank gets these. And they are a mini magnet collection of Route 66.
Oh, he's going to love those.
I know. He asked me for them a long time ago. So I told him I would get them. And I've had them in my possession for 7 years.
Wow. That is a delay.
They went missing for a little while. Well, you know, I mean, the post office sometimes delays longer. But
he should know.
He should. But yeah, so anyway, so I'm going to send these out along with your Castlevania Pixel.
Okay, cool.
Data box.
So I'll send it to the same address.
Right. Well, I will send everything to you. So just make sure Frank gets these.
Gotcha.
Or if you want to hold on to them for 7 years and you give it to him. Whatever you want to do.
Should put them on my magnet. He'd be like, wait a minute. When did you go to Route 66?
So anyway, just a little side story there. But yes, cool. I'm home. I'm in my new home. I've got my little setup behind me with all of my gaming memorabilia.
I like it. Look at all those minis.
Yeah, I got all the minis up on display up there, which is really cool. If you look around behind me, I've got my video game DVD collection over here. I've got my NES
Lego
stuff. Got my little cereal boxes.
Very good.
You can see Freddy and 8-Bit Freddy and Jason there.
I like it.
Books, stuff you'll never read.
Nope.
I got my Final Fantasy from Universal Studios Japan when I went on the ride.
I was trying to figure out what that was.
Yeah, this is the one that.
Here we go.
See that?
Oh yes, I do remember that.
I remember that.
Yes.
It's hard to tell on camera, all right. Obviously, but
we'll assume it says Final Fantasy,
which is really cool. So
blue, and then light blue.
Blue and then green. So it's blue, green, and white. I think there may be red too. I don't remember. But anyway, I got space for that. I got my Zelda.
Oh, here. I love that thing.
Yeah, you know, the one that makes... I don't think you're going to hear it that far away.
But, we heard it. I mean, it sounded like a scream at first.
Yeah,
but,
you know, with the
I love that like thing. That. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, all right. Well, I was going to save this for later, but I'll share it now because it's sitting on my shelf and you're going to really appreciate this. So a friend of mine really good friend of mine. He worked it. He worked at Universal Studios Japan for about a year. Okay. Signed a contract, went over there. He was he worked as an actor in the park. He was doing that last year while they were finishing Nintendo World and all that stuff. And obviously, everybody worked in the park got to see Nintendo World before it actually opened. So when he told me that he was going, I said, you gotta bring me something. You gotta bring me something. Because I knew I wasn't gonna get there. All so right. He did bring me something, and I've been dying to show this off because when I got back to LA, you know, 6-7 weeks ago, he gave it to me, but I was saving it for when I moved into my new place because it just went in a place, it went somewhere and just disappeared. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he brought me back a popcorn bucket.
Oh,
in the shape of a star.
That is awesome.
Which is great. And the popcorn, he didn't have popcorn in it. It comes with like the lanyard to hold it or the popcorn holder.
What a weird place to put the popcorn.
Well, we won't talk about that. But, but you know, this is the popcorn holder because you know you can wear these around your neck or whatever and carry them. No, they're really serious about their popcorn there.
Apparently.
But even this is really designed well.
That's wild.
It's wild, but wait, it gets better.
What? Oh, don't tell me it does something.
Because when you do this.
What the hell? Oh!
This comes off.
Wait, what? What is that?
Wait.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. That's a stupid popcorn bucket, and it does all of that? Figures from Japan.
So the what Larry is reacting to is that the
popcorn, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot with star, audio as well,
right, the star lights up both, you know, still and blinking.
Well, first of all, the face of the popcorn bucket comes off, so yes. Now it's a separate piece, and yes, it lights up and it blinks, and then in your head just go man, 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 and that is wild.
So this is amazing. So the Japanese, they're very, especially in theme parks, they're really wild about popcorn buckets. And the reason why I know this is because I've actually worked on several popcorn buckets for their parks.
Have you really? That's such a, I can imagine the first time you're like, am I getting demoted? What is going on here?
No. Their popcorn buckets are no joke. They're really, really cool. So when he brought this back for me, I was so excited.
Like, that is awesome.
Absolutely amazing. So I got my star popcorn bucket on one of my shelves over here behind me.
Very cool.
Which is really cool. Yeah, so I should put it somewhere where you can see it. Yeah, you gave this to me a while ago. We're gonna move that.
Oh yeah, that more of a Christmas thing.
Classic fold up. Yes, but we're gonna put the star up there in the corner so you can see it.
And then mine's gonna go away so you never see it again.
Well, you know what? The whole cool thing about my new backdrop is that I can shift things around.
This is true.
So you know, I'll definitely be doing that.
It's gonna be an entire episode.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody just watch me as I move everything around behind me. You can do the same. You can do the same thing. You can shuffle your pops.
Plan on doing it soon, just to get the other pops out and you know in the sunlight and the fresh air.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
Very cool.
So I'm all set up. Happy to be back on the show. I know I took last week off, but happy to be back.
Yes, definitely. And of course, last week, we want to thank Felix of Flexo Productions.
Yes.
To be on the show.
Very much. He was a perfectly acceptable replacement for me.
Yes. Yes. Totally. Do you speak any Spanish?
No.
All right. There we go.
There you go. Well, that was Spanish.
True. No. check out Felix at Flexo Productions at Dominican Stone Cold. Check him out on social media. Very funny. And again, as I told him, it was the first time he was on, not the last time. So we'll definitely happy to have him back on down the road.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to having him back on when I'm here too as well, so I can chat with him.
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also just real quick, I just want to ask this, and then we'll actually kind of get into the meat and potatoes here of the show. Mm-hmm. Polymeg has been posting a lot more stuff lately, and in
yes,
our
they have been.
For the first time in a long time, in our Polymega update, bam, Polymega update. Well, my update is I'm not getting one anymore.
No, your update is you canceled it like a fool.
No, well, at this point, maybe not realizing that there was a chip shortage, and that's why it's taking forever for Analog to put out their Duo. Yep. But be that as it may.
Yeah, but the bottom line is Polymega is going to have a release date update on Monday, August 2nd. Obviously, this episode drops on Tuesday, so the announcement will already be out, but we obviously record it beforehand.
Yeah, so right now we don't know. Hopefully, mm-hmm. for Anthony's sake, it will be something very soon. Because
I hope so, and I hope it goes to the right address. Because coincidentally, I emailed Poly Mega last week, mm-hmm. And basically asked him. I said, "Hey, I placed my order over 2 years ago. Do you ever plan on sending it? Since I paid for it."
Wow, you could have just been like, "Here's my new address."
No. No. I've learned through this move, like this move specifically has taught me, you know what? You're not mincing words anymore. You're just going right at it. So I asked them and said, "Hey," I was like, so I asked them that. And then I told them and I said, "And for the third time, here is my new shipping address."
At which point they should be annoyed at you, not you annoyed at them.
No, you know what though? I think my secret plan is there's a chance now that I may get three of them. Because if they ship one to every address.
That's why I'm banking on mine to show up.
Right, exactly. Because my friend lives at my old address in Glendale. So okay. She'll take care of it there. I've got mail forwarding at my Florida address. So that would just head over to me. And then I've got my current address, which they updated. They updated to my current shipping address. Good. So all is good there. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah, hopefully it will be sometime soon. Yes, I canceled my order months ago, which doesn't bother me. I've been very happy with the analogs. Really, the only thing I'll be missing out on is, I think, being able to play Jim Power in Mutant League something or other. I forgot the title of it. The one that you broke into my house to try and fix that day.
Oh, yes. The one that was upside down.
Yeah, that's the only TurboGrafx CD I have so far. And of course, all the TurboGrafx games.
And speaking of Upside Down, now that you bring it up, you know, there is one thing on my shelf that also suffers from the same fate that your game suffers from. And to me, it's a bit more egregious because it's a book.
It's a riddle I'm trying to figure
generally,
out.
Generally, well, for an example, books like here's the game console, A Photographic History from Atari to Xbox, right? Mm-hmm. When you turn to the spine, it's always this way, mm-hmm. right? But when I
basically the type you read down, the wording is down,
right? You read down. Now, my Nintendo 64 anthology book, when I got it, is the other way, and it's the only book I've ever seen where it's the other way. So, in other words, if I wanted this to line up with the rest of my books, I'd have to turn it upside down on the shelf.
Yeah, that's weird for a book.
Because right side up, like if I was laying this on my coffee table like this, you're going to look at the side of it. It's upside down, which makes no sense to me at all.
That's weird. Is that a European thing, maybe? Weird. I don't know.
I don't know. It could be. And anybody from Europe who listens to us, please let me know. But of course, looking at my shelf, it bothers me every time.
He's just gonna black that one out like with a blackout curtain.
It's like it doesn't exist anymore. Stupid N64.
Oh, well.
All right. Anyway, now I'm struggling to get these back on the shelf because I'm trying to do this podcast. Anyway.
So hopefully we'll hear some more about the Polymega. And, and maybe at some point we'll actually get an unboxing with the Polymega.
That would be excellent. And it would have to be me doing it.
It would have to, yes. And you didn't get any of the modules, right? You just got the base.
No. I just got the base because I didn't see a point in getting the modules because the modules basically just play one system at a time. I already have those.
Okay.
Right. No, I was just saying, I already have those and I have the Retro Freak, which handles all of them. So that's why I didn't get the other.
Gravy. So,
but I'm looking forward to finally getting one and taking all of my CD-based games and sticking them on that console.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So let's get into it then officially, I guess, with the start of the show. We announced a couple of weeks ago.
We already
ago.
Started the show like 15
I meant,
minutes
you know,
ago.
Like with the actual, you know, now we got the banter.
The actual show?
The banter.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, one last piece of banter before we start the actual show.
What did I forget?
No, just a quick shout out to one of our diehard fans, Frankie, because he had, give me a minute and I'll tell you why. I'm sure he's not going to appreciate that attitude.
Oh, no, he's going to text me and call me now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Frankie played Final Fantasy Remake on PS4 because I recommended it to him and he absolutely loved it. So then he went back and he downloaded the original Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, okay.
The original PlayStation version, because you can buy it, obviously, on PlayStation
everywhere.
Store.
Yeah.
And so he's playing it, and I get these random updates from him. You know, he texts me random stuff. You know, a lot, like a couple of the texts are just like, I don't know where to go anymore, you know, because the game is so vast. Like sometimes you just get lost wandering around. But then he sends me a picture of Aerith getting killed by Sephiroth. And he's like, oh, he just killed her. And I'm like, yep. How does that feel?
Did that not happen apparently in the remake? I didn't play it. Okay, interesting.
Spoiler alert. No.
Yeah, I guess so at this point, right? Interesting.
Well, it's been out long enough, but still no. Yeah, exactly. It's not. But in the original, but here, and this is a lot of like people complain about it in the original, not because it happens, because it's like one of the most dramatic moments ever in a video game. People complained about it because she was a playable character and you spent a lot of time building her up and leveling her up, and then she's killed and you never get to use her again. So like wasted all this time leveling her up for her to die, and then when you could have been leveling up a different character. So
things happen in life. That's what Square Enix was all about. And you're like, look,
yeah, that is life. Tough.
Exactly. Right? You know, Doomsday got Superman. So, you know,
case or very Sarah. True. That was DC.
Well, yeah, still.
That was not Square. Anyway, moving on. Start the show.
Quote unquote. So, a couple weeks ago, after lighting the internet on fire with my thoughts about Breath of the Wild, we came up with a
Your incorrect thoughts about Breath of the Wild.
I don't know. A lot of people are getting behind me.
Yes, all two of them.
No, the train is on the track. It is in motion. I'm telling you, we're gonna take this thing all across.
It's the Back to the Future 3 train that just goes off the bridge into the ravine, right?
Shonash Ravine. So the unpopular opinion, and we reached out to the people in the masses. And remember, folks, you can submit your unpopular opinions. Short video explaining your unpopular opinion and why you think it is what it is. And then you can drop us a line, whether it's Dropbox or whatever we share or whatever. Send it to the email at theretrogamers.com. You can try and DM us the links. I'm sure it would still work. And of course, our good friend and longtime listener of the show, Aaron, over there, CBM Gaming.
Yes.
Came up with our first, basically, official unpopular opinion video. And real quick, because, you know, after we listen to the video, we may never want to speak with him again. So I just want to give a quick shout out to Aaron's Twitch. He's at twitch.com/rusty_cable. Excuse me, twitch.tv. I always forget this is .tv. twitch.tv/rusty_cable. So you can check him out on Twitch. And he's got an interesting unpopular opinion that I think it's gonna bug us both, actually, Ant.
Potentially, yeah. Should we play it?
Yes, let's see. So here's this week's unpopular opinion.
Hey, Anthony. Hey, Larry. It's Aaron. Got a unpopular opinion, you could call it. I'm sure a lot of people are gonna flame me for this one, but I'd have to say one of my least favorite consoles out of all of them is probably this thing. I've hated this system. Actually, I don't hate it. It does have some good games, but it's definitely one of the lowest on my list. But another thing I've got that I would say is a more popular opinion, although Larry might disagree, would be these. Kind of hard to read, but these, Larry, it's trash. get an OSSC and some SCART cables or component cables. You got to do something. Get rid of those things. But anyway, congratulations, you guys, on 5 years of the Retro Gamers podcast. That's awesome. Hope you guys have many more. Take care.
Wow.
Yeah, Aaron, please never contact us again.
Aaron, feel free to contact us. The reason why I'm going to give you a pass is because I like the way you correct Larry all the time.
Well, it's him. There's a couple of people who correct me all the time. So, yeah.
He's definitely one of them. Even in that video, he corrected you.
He did. I'm going to get to that in a moment. But first, let's talk about the unpopular opinion. The N64, yes. He's not crazy about.
Wow. Here's why I can understand it. One of the issues when the N64 came out, and it's what wound up dooming the GameCube, was that it really didn't have a ton of third-party support. But Nintendo 64 had a lot of really strong first-party games, which is why I think we loved it so much. But the lack of third-party support definitely hurt it amongst other gamers. And on top of that, and this was discussed before with the N64, no RPGs. And that was a big killer at that point, because RPGs were getting huge in the mid to late 90s, especially in the US. So not having those really put a dent in it. So I can understand the thinking. And again, Aaron didn't really specify why. And I would love to get the why on that, because maybe it was one of those reasons. But that's the only thing I can think of as to why it was not a very popular console.
I thought it was an extremely popular console.
Oh, no. I loved it.
Oh, to me, it's probably the greatest Nintendo console, yeah, in my humble opinion. You could talk about third parties. Everyone could talk about third parties, but it was first party that carried that system, that helped launch the system. Obviously, Super Mario 64 was a literal game changer, yep, in the industry, not, yep, just for Nintendo. And then Link to the Past, Ocarina of Time, not a traditional RPG, but sometimes it feels like one, even though it's more of an adventure game.
Yeah.
But
you can go on and on. It's like Mario Kart 64, Mario Party, Majora's Mask, Fox 64 with the Rumble Pack.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, first party, and to me that's fine. First party, that was all Nintendo. It's a Nintendo system. We'll let Nintendo deal with it. The controller, I think for me, the N64 controller, I think is the most comfortable, shockingly enough, controller that there was. And I loved that controller. I talked about it a few weeks ago, just playing GoldenEye. You felt like you had that gun in your hand. Mm-hmm. But look, not everyone I know is a Nintendo fan. Apparently not everyone's an N64 fan, but I would have thought maybe like the Wii or the GameCube, if you're not going to like a system, but maybe because he can't mod it. Yeah. He's a modder, and CBM Gaming,
be careful what you say about modders.
I'm going to say good. I like modders, don't get me wrong.
As you order a certain mister from a friend.
Exactly. Soon. I don't think there's really too many mods people are doing to an N64. I think other than like an HDMI mod to it or something like that. Mm-hmm. But otherwise it's really not much to do to it, but no. I don't know if that's where he's coming from, but nevertheless,
could be.
Wow, that's a strong opinion. So, and of course, we're all entitled to them.
Yes.
I think he's wrong, but we're entitled to them. And of course, let us know in the comments. Do you agree with him? Do you disagree with him? Is the N64 just not a fun system? Maybe not the worst system in the world, but was it not a fun system? Was it a great system? Let us know.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I don't agree with Aaron. I respectfully disagree because I love my N64, but would it be an unpopular opinion if I said I was not a big fan of the Wii?
Which would be weird because the Wii was like one of the biggest sellers.
I didn't own a Wii until like three, 4 years ago.
True.
Because just the whole concept of standing, it's fun. The whole concept of standing in my living room with a controller in my hand and waving my arms all over the place. I'm like, I don't want to play games like that. Now I have a PlayStation VR.
And ironically enough, there wasn't a lot of that happening with the Wii games. Yeah, some games did require that, but not all of them.
Yeah. But it kept me away for the first time ever. Yeah. It kept me away from buying a Nintendo system. So I missed out on Skyward Sword, Mario Galaxy 1 and 2, like some of the state, the usual tentpoles of
the
staples. Other
Mario Party games and stuff like that. I got
The Mario Kart. Yeah, I missed all of those because of moving away from Nintendo.
You respectfully disagree with him. I highly disrespectfully disagree with him. But that's how we go from there.
You like to make enemies. I know.
I told someone the other day the amount of bridges I've burnt in my life is astronomical. So
I'm aware. I'm aware. I always keep a box of matches nearby because I'm just waiting for the day.
But Aaron also, you know, as much as that was kind of like a gut punch, you know what I mean? Kind of, you know, that was like a shot to the liver, kind of. But then he gave a quick pop at it, like right when the bell rang. Boom, right in the eye. Like I wasn't expecting it.
Yes. And what was great about this one is this one was right to you.
Yeah, basically. You know, this attack on the Hyperkin HDMI wires. I have them for what, 1, 2, 3, 5. Mm-hmm. PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, original Xbox, Saturn, and Dreamcast. I didn't count those. So in any event, I got a bunch of them. And
yes, you do.
Again, I'm not looking for that absolute crystal clear, you know, I don't remember what the game was like originally. That's how long ago it was. And I know a lot of people out there want to get that and want to get that frame rate exactly, the number of pixels right there. Mm-hmm. I don't need that. So the HDMI wires for me are working great. The whole conversion, like with the component, I guess converting the component wires into HDMI or something like that works a little better, especially with my Dreamcast, because like literally half my games, four of them, so two of them, like won't play in the system because of the HDMI wire that I have. But I don't know, I'm still getting use out of them. So until I'm truly proven otherwise, Aaron, I will continue to promote and use Hyperkin HDMI wires. Again, Hyperkin, the Kmart of third-party brand systems, peripherals or whatnot. So
I think that might be why he's telling you that they're not good. Because where is Kmart now?
I don't know. You know, I saw one. I feel like I saw one like on a highway somewhere, but I can't remember. Are they literally even still in?
They are out of business.
They are out of business? Maybe it was a Circle K I saw.
Probably a Circle K.
Maybe it was a Circle K.
Where strange things are always afoot.
Oh, I love that movie. So yeah,
I would love for people to just get all of our references. I wonder if they do.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of people who do. And I'm sure there's got to be a... I think we talked about me and Felix talked about something last week where like we almost dated ourselves, like with Funko Land almost. And we've mentioned Funko Land before.
We Funko Land all the time. I was like, we date ourselves every episode. This is a retro gaming podcast.
So, So thank you though, Aaron, for your submission for the unpopular opinion.
Yes, Aaron, thank you for the unpopular opinion. It was actually a pretty good one too.
It was interesting. It was interesting. Definitely not in what I was expecting. Again, email at theretrogamers.com or just send us a DM with a link and we might feature you on a future segment of Unpopular Opinion.
Yes. Anything that gets Larry to talk a little less.
Actually, you got to talk to me more because he nailed me with the Hyperkin wires.
That's very true. He did. You know, I'm sure your feelings are hurt. So, be sure to burn that bridge.
Told you. I'm ready. The ash behind me.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, all right. Well, before you torch another relationship, let's move on.
All right. So I saw this list here recently and I brought it up to Ant's attention. And, you know, it's something that happens every now and again. And like when it does happen, or at least back in the day. And now if it happens, it's just like, I could probably get that somewhere else. But like originally, it was the original form of the virtual console. Some of these of which I never even knew about. Games within games.
Yeah, and this is interesting because when you sent me the article, what I originally thought you were talking about were like original video games inside a video game. So in other words, like when I play Grand Theft Auto 5, I own an arcade.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
You can buy arcade cabinets for it. But when you have your arcade all built and you go there, you can play the actual arcade games in the cabinet, but they're all original games. So when I first saw this, I was like, oh, he's talking about like those kind of games, but no, a little bit different.
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even know you could do that in GTA 5.
Oh yeah. No, I have I have an arcade like somewhere in I don't remember where I bought it. It's somewhere in downtown or something. But yeah, like I have a full arcade.
Huh. Yeah. All original games too.
They're all original games. You buy original games to play.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, now I got to check that out. All right.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's the exact opposite of what we're talking about here.
Go to my arcade so I can get your money.
Fair enough. We'll do.
Thank you.
I forgot what system I have GTA 5 on.
I haven't played it in a long time.
The game's been out for so long. I'm pretty sure I have it on the N64.
Well, I mean, and you might as well hang on to it. We're never getting a 6.
So we're talking about actual video games in actual video games. And like I said, an interesting list, some of which I knew, some of which actually shocked me and make me want to go back and play some of these games to get to them. But we're going to get into it right now. And we're going to start off with the one that really was the reason why I even got this video game. And I've said it before, to me, it's the original version of Nintendo's virtual consoles, Animal Crossing on GameCube.
Yes.
Now, did you have Animal Crossing on GameCube?
I've never played a single second of Animal Crossing.
Fair enough. So that's a no.
No.
So the whole idea, and they only did this, really, I think, with the first one. Ever since then, I don't think they've ever really ventured back to this idea of finding games. But Animal Crossing, you were able to find, not even purchase, it was more finding various NES games and like full versions of these NES games within Animal Crossing. And when I learned about this, and again, this was before any virtual console, before hooking up a Nintendo system to the web, to the internet. So the only way you were playing these games would have been really like either having them originally or, you know, some were ported to the Game Boy Advance or whatever. But I didn't find all of them. I know that for a fact. I never found all of them. But just to name a few that you were able to find, and of course, granted, they're all first party games. Balloon Fight, Clue Land. A couple different Donkey Kongs. I'm not sure if all three of them were on there. Maybe all three of them were on there.
Maybe.
Excitebike, Golf, Tennis, Punch-Out. I'm sorry. Super Mario Brothers. I don't know why I was blanking on that, because I forgot if it was the original Mario Brothers or Super. Super Mario Brothers and even Zelda. So, and a couple of those you have to use without with it like an action replay or something like that. But, that was the original thing. And you used to be able to when you built your house, you put all the systems all around the house and stuff like that. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah. And what's cool about it too, is like, well, you also got to remember like those games are like 8 kilobytes, 10 kilobytes, 12 kilobytes each, not even a megabyte, way, way small. So very easy to fit on any cartridge, any disc at that point. Cause you know, discs were holding, well, at least I don't know about GameCube discs, but like discs were essentially holding like 650 megabytes.
Information. Yeah. I mean, I just thought it was just such a great idea to all of a sudden bring in these full, and again, not just like, all right, we'll give you the first level or something, like the full game. And again, I'm not talking about anything with the size of the game. I'm just talking about just what to offer. Now, granted, like I said, some you found, some were gifted. Others were only available through giveaways by Nintendo or through the e-reader, Game Boy Advance accessory, which is always weird. Right. Which also meant you have to have a Game Boy player for the GameCube. So it was a lot actually involved on that one.
Yeah, well, leave it to Nintendo to make you buy more stuff.
Well, luckily I had all of those.
mission accomplished.
There you go. So it was really cool. And again, they were basically free. So just really, really cool at the time where, again, what are we talking? Maybe 2002, 2003. I forgot exactly when Animal Crossing came out.
Somewhere around
2002. Well,
it might have been a little earlier. Yeah, that's insane.
It was 2002, and that was around the time, a couple years earlier, where I kind of discovered the feel of retro gaming and everything. You know, I talked about being in college and hearing that Zelda theme song and someone bringing in their original NES. I'm like, what the hell are you bringing this in for? You know, not realizing the impact it would have. So,
yeah, see?
Very cool.
That's just the rest is history.
In a game where we talked about a couple weeks ago, as far as there's like 9 million things to find in this game. This is one of them. Donkey Kong 64 actually had two playable games in it. Had first of all, from Rare, because Rare made Donkey Kong 64, one of their early games, Jetpack, which is actually available on the Rare Replay for the Xbox.
Nice. Which
I've talked about this before, where I only know of maybe three versions that are out on console. The original, true original arcade version of Donkey Kong.
Yes.
And when I say that, I am talking about the inclusion of the pie factory or cement factory. A level that, let's be fair, when you play the arcade game, it's a level sometimes you kind of forget was even in the game. Yeah. Because on every port up until here, it never was on the game.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I don't know if that was like a memory issue or a licensing issue where they didn't.
I think it was more memory.
Memory, yeah.
I'd have to guess memory. Just my assumption. But, I mean, certainly wasn't on the NES versions or any. The first time I remember seeing a version of the Pie Factory was in Donkey Kong for Game Boy. It's actually the first Super Game Boy enabled game. And it ended up expanding on the Donkey Kong video game where it ended up being hundreds of levels. It's a great puzzler, actually. Great fun puzzler. But the first four levels are versions of the original levels, one of which is the Pie Factory. So I remember when I was playing it on Game Boy, I'm like, this is weird. I guess it just threw this in because every level had to have four levels to them, you know, like four rounds or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, this version brings back the original. After this, it was basically only available as like a special download code for European Wii systems and North American 3DS systems. And of course, the arcade archive on the Switch has the perfect version of the Donkey Kong arcade. But do you, I mean, did you play Donkey Kong 64? Did you ever find this game?
I never played Donkey Kong 64.
Right, yeah, neither did I, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But still, very cool
to
see.
Which is unfortunate because I want to go back now and get like all 3,900 hidden items or whatever it is.
It's a ton of them.
Yeah. Why not?
Next one up, which I totally forgot about. I thought it was only on a demo disc. But
No, this one I actually knew.
All right, yeah, this we're talking about the original Star Wars arcade game in Star Wars Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike for the GameCube.
Yeah, and that's really cool because that original game was just so cool, especially like for its time. You know, and licensed games were kind of a new thing back then, like, cuz we're talking like what, late 70s, early 80s. Only a handful of film franchises have had licensed games, so it was, and not only that, like with the limitations they had, like it was a really fun game.
Well, seeing how LucasArts is on here a couple of times, I guess maybe they kind of had an in or help with Nintendo, because we're gonna talk about another one in a moment. But in this one, you can unlock either through just unlocks or passwords. You can unlock the original arcade games of Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
Now. I'm pretty sure if I remember, I have a demo disc for this game. I think it's a demo disc that has a version. I think maybe like one of the later Star Wars arcade games. I gotta go and check. It's okay. All the way over there. I don't want to get up and get it. But
lazy. I'm kidding.
Okay. Oh, okay. But nevertheless, though, those three arcade games on there on Rogue Squadron 3, pretty cool. So, because those like vector graphics were really neat back in the day, and even back in the early 2000s, even to today.
Yeah, no, I think vector graphic games were really cool. I mean, because they gave you like a completely unique first person perspective. So,
absolutely, that's why I like the last month I've just been obsessed with Tempest.
Yeah,
playing it all over the place and playing it on the original the original Atari version. Oofah.
Nice. Very nice.
All right, so a game I know Anthony didn't play because this one was on the Wii, in the Indiana Jones game on the Wii, Indiana Jones and the Staff of Kings, you were able to play not necessarily an arcade game but a point and click PC game, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis.
Now, I never heard of the Staff of Kings game, but I heard of Fate of Atlantis.
Yeah, it was Staff of Kings was as it says here on Nintendo Life, we're getting this from, released at the height of the Wii Waggle era.
Wii Waggle.
Yeah, because everyone was throwing around the Wii and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, the game itself, Staff of Kings, wasn't really the best in the world, but with the pointer, with the Wiimote, was perfect to include this PC classic, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis. Now, you said you've played Fate of Atlantis.
No. I knew. You heard of it. Okay. I never played it. Yeah.
And to get it, basically, it was accessible. You had to complete the first level, having shot down four planes. Or, of course, you can enter a cheat code. And that just sounds like a fun, fun game. I mean, just to include like a second. Again, we're not talking about an arcade game. Now we're talking about like a home, quote unquote, home console game with the PC, and an older one too.
Yeah, which I thought was actually really, really cool because it shouldn't just be limited to like, really like old games from the 80s and stuff like that. Like,
And
or was
amazing.
that an 80s game? I'm trying to remember. Fate of Atlantis.
You know what? You want to give it a quick check?
I'm going to give it a quick look while you go on.
But I am pretty sure that is not the oldest game in this list, though, to be honest with you.
No, I don't think so either.
So, in a game that I remember when.
1992.
Oh, okay. I would have thought it was a little earlier than that.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit later. It was
Okay.
on the Amiga,
Oh.
MS-DOS, Mac, and Macintosh.
All right, cool.
Along with the Wii. Oh, interesting. Yeah, it
What?
played like we all know LucasArts, like it played like Maniac Mansion, it looks like. You know, where they have like on the
Oh.
bottom, they give you the instructions.
Yeah.
Don't make that face.
I hate Maniac Mansion.
Oh my God, Maniac Mansion was so much fun.
It's not even an unpopular opinion. I'm just not crazy about
Well, no,
it.
that was the point and click games are kind of like for me, it's like first person shooters. Like I can't really play a first person shooter because not because I hate them, they give me headaches, but
Okay.
for that reason alone, it makes it annoying. But point and click games are kind of like you kind of have to they have to grow it.
All right.
They
And
do.
they're more akin to puzzlers anyway.
Right, and I'm a puzzle player,
There you
so
go.
you are
There you
not.
go. No, not
No,
not.
you are just puzzled.
Wow. Correct. Accurate. Accurate. So,
Accurate, right?
up next from the Super Nintendo. Great game, first of all. Legend of the Mystical Ninja on Super
Yes.
Nintendo.
Excellent game.
Very fun game. But within that game, now it's not a full version, admittedly. I think it's only the first level, if I remember correctly, and if I can read this article quickly enough. But there is the first level of Gradius that was in Mystical Ninja.
You're giving me like this list is making me want to find out what the first video game within a video game was. So I'm gonna do a quick search of
Oh,
that.
boy.
But yeah, Gradius, first of all, Legend of Mystical Ninja, fantastic. But I'm wondering, was that the first game to do this? So.
Yeah, no, but definitely not. I don't think it was. But yeah, Gradius was a mini game. Like I said, it was only the first level in the game's game center. But that was still very cool to see, especially with Gradius. For me, I love the Gradius series. One of the best shoot 'em ups that there is, right next to R-Type.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Gradius for me is actually probably was actually my favorite shoot 'em up.
Actually, funny enough, I just found out. I didn't even know this existed. So, on the PS2, I had Gradius 5. Great game. And I feel like the last PS2 game that had a purple bottom until they just switched, they stopped using colored discs.
Oh
But
yes, I remember those.
so, Gradius 5, fantastic game, great graphics on the PS2. Apparently, though, there is a standalone disc that featured both Gradius 3 and 4 on the PS2.
Ooh.
And I just discovered this recently, and now I need to get my hands on it. I mean, I've played
That's
3 and 4
interesting.
before. Oh, no, that's a lie. Have I played 4? I definitely played 3. I don't know if I've ever played 4 before. I'll have to check that out.
You'll have to look.
But yeah, knowing that it was a release alone on the PS2, that might have to be my next purchase if I can find it. Moving on here, we got one,
Moving on.
two, I think we got two, maybe three. We got three left here on the list.
All
There's a
right.
second page. I didn't even know there was a second
Yes,
page.
there is a second page.
Okay,
So
well,
you're
we're all going to
going.
be shocked here in a little bit.
Well, we are because you're going incredibly slow.
In Call of Duty Black Ops for the Wii, you can play, which I find hysterical here, the 1980 text adventure Zork.
Yeah, now, why is my question? In a Call of Duty game, would you find Zork?
Why not? That's my question.
I mean,
Why not?
I think it's kind of cool. I mean, I don't think you would ever play it. Text-based games?
Well, it was the 80s, so I mean, I
Did you
probably would
ever?
have played it
No,
back then. No, I
have you ever played a text-based?
no, none that I can remember.
There you go.
So it doesn't mean I wouldn't.
I'm just asking.
So I think it's more they included that because of the timeline of the video game.
Could be.
Yeah, so. that could be it, but still very cool to see Zork in that game.
Yep.
This I did not realize, even though I didn't own one of these games. Mm-hmm. Both,
nice to meet you.
Both in Metroid Zero Mission for the Game Boy Advance and the Virtual Console, and Metroid Prime on the game GameCube, you can play the original Metroid.
Wow.
Basically straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, like who knew? I mean, yeah. Well, obviously, it makes total sense. Buy a Metroid game, play the original.
Which is funny because Zero Mission is a remake of the original Metroid. And they're like, you know what? We're just going to throw the original in here anyway.
We'll throw the original in there anyway. So it kind of looks familiar since you're playing through this version. But play it anyway.
Real easy way to get it. Metroid is unlockable in Metroid Prime by connecting Metroid Fusion to your GameCube via the Game Boy Advance Link cable.
There you go.
Very cool.
Very cool.
All right. So real quick, this one I know none of us played, but I'll mention it. In Wolfenstein 3D on the Game Boy. No, excuse me. Let me rephrase that.
Reverse that.
Yep. Found in Wolfenstein 2, the New Colossus on Switch. You can play Wolfenstein 3D on the Game Boy.
There you go.
Or Game Boy's version. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too. Yeah. I mean, obviously the original Wolfenstein 3D is iconic. So
yeah. Oh wait, I did look at the second page. All right, so we're gonna pick up the pace here on the second page.
Yeah, because, hurry up.
Yeah, no, these are actually page two is actually better than page one. Found in Prince of Persia, Sands of Time on the GameCube. Was that the one the movie was based off of?
I believe so.
Yeah. Is the Game Boy version of Prince of Persia.
Again, pretty straightforward. Although I will say, when you look at the picture of the Game Boy version, it doesn't look very appealing.
It's the Game Boy. What do you expect?
I didn't have one.
Let's see. In Doom Eternal, which I find very weird, you can play Doom and Doom 2 if you don't want to spend the $3 to buy those separately.
Wait, what do you find strange about that?
Because you can buy Doom and Doom 2 completely separately for like $2 or $3 each, as opposed to shelling out $60 for Doom Eternal.
Yeah, but if you want to play Doom Eternal, you buy it and then you get a couple of freebies.
Cheap. No, very cool nevertheless, though. Doom and Doom 2, I feel like, are constantly being given out. So
you're cheap, yet you spend all your money.
How dare you? Here's an interesting one. Star Fox Assault on GameCube had Xevious in it.
That I had no idea. I played Assault. So that was a big surprise.
Funny enough, the Japanese version also included Famicom title space shooter Star Luster and Battle City.
Wow.
Interesting.
Maybe I should buy the Japanese one.
this is interesting. In the game Celeste for the Switch, have you played that?
No, but it's on my list. It's a game I definitely want to play.
You can play the original Pico 8 version of Celeste.
Because why not?
The Pico 8 is a system you don't often hear about.
No, you really don't.
So,
I don't remember the last time I heard about the Pico 8. I'm trying to think right now.
It's basically a small-scale original version was created in just 4 days.
Wow.
I'm starting to think Pico 8 is not actually a system as much as it was the creator, but in any event. And then in the final four, this is a stretch because I got the game and I wouldn't really say it's a game within a game. It's just more of a bonus, but Contra 4 on the DS, which is actually an amazing game, takes advantage of the dual screen perfectly. You can play Contra and Super C on there, but again, they're more unlockables as opposed to finding them in the game, kind of like some of these other ones are.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that's okay. I would still categorize that.
No, I think one of them, I think, was playable right off the bat. That's what I'm saying, if I remember
correctly. I still think that's allowed.
But what's cool, though, is for a very long time, the original Contra was unavailable on Virtual Console.
Yep.
On any, it was very, Super C was all over the place. Even on the Mini, the NES Mini, only had Super C. Contra.
So obviously, you had to buy Contra 4 for the DS if you wanted.
This was one of the only times I was able to replay the original Contra before getting my hands on, you know, something that I was able to play the original cart. This is something I never knew, and I want to go back and find it.
So do I.
Sonic Adventure DX Director's Cut. You can find the 8-bit Game Gear version of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Actually, let me stand corrected. I believe you can find both 1 and 2
One and two. You can find one and two.
For the Master System and Game Gear, because the Game Gear was basically a handheld Master System.
Yeah, so, exactly.
But
so, yeah, I wanna go back and check out Sonic Adventure DS.
And those Sonic games, one and two, even though they're like 8-bit versions, they play differently enough that it feels like a completely different game.
Oh, cool.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I've got to try that out.
And wrapping up, found in Pokemon Gold and Silver, kind of, sort of, for the Game Boy, are the original Pokemon Red and Blue.
There you go.
So that's pretty cool.
You know, I would love to go back and try a Pokemon game. That's not like a real traditional Pokemon game.
And by Red and Blue, we're talking about like the entire region, the Kanto region from there is in Gold and Silver, so that's why it's kind of, sort of. I have Blue. I downloaded Blue on my 3DS on the Virtual Console. I haven't really gotten far into it. Because I didn't hate it. I just stopped playing. But I definitely do want to get my hands anyway. Kind of like what you said, though. Get my hands on an original Game Boy cart just to own, because I never even owned one before. Yeah. So. And finally, this, I remember when this was announced. I don't think it's available anymore since all the updates. Yeah. But basically, in the original firmware, 1.0 firmware for the Switch was a fully playable version of Golf.
Why not?
So they just kind of threw that in there.
Yeah, just ran them. It's like, yeah, Golf. Everybody can have it.
Basically. So, that's in a nutshell. Not really. That's a very big nut. Those
big
are
nutshell.
Games within games. So pretty cool.
Very,
always
very
like
cool.
A little bonus.
Yeah. No, bonuses are always nice. I mean, look, and especially because Nintendo never really discounts their games that much, you know? So anything they can throw in there is definitely much appreciated. So
definitely.
Thank you, Nintendo, for, you know, giving us, you know, those little slim pickings on top of every dollar we spend.
To me, Animal Crossing was the go-to in that list. So,
no, which made total sense. But it also made me think of like, it wasn't a game within a game, though. It was the ones on the Wii U where you had to play, like you played Zelda and Mario, but they had little, it was like NES Remix. That's what it was.
Oh, like those. Yeah.
That popped in my head.
Those are wild.
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, those have one. They have Remix on 3DS as well, which is really cool.
Nice. Yeah. It just made me think of that for some reason. Because, I mean, those are just snippets of games, not game-winning games.
Very much. So. And fun, like, when they combine some of the games. Like, your Zelda in Donkey Kong.
In Donkey Kong, yeah. It's a very interesting game. Two games, actually. There were two volumes.
Yeah, they were. So they're very cool. And they also have some cool, like, one of them has a hyper-sped-up version of Super Mario Brothers. One has like Super Mario Brothers, but you play as Luigi, but you go right to left instead of left to right.
Oh, yes.
Which is very weird. And the Game Boy, I'm trying to think what the 3DS one had or the DS one. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, again, cool bonuses. So
yeah, very, very cool.
All righty.
All right.
So we're gonna move on. I don't know if we're gonna wrap up with this, because we're coming close here, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention some birthdays this week. Some retro birthdays.
Yes. We have some really good retro birthdays this week. Three, in fact.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Three worth mentioning, I think.
Fair enough.
The first one is celebrating. I'm actually doing the oldest one first. I'm bouncing around a little bit. But the first one is celebrating its 40th retro birthday.
Wow.
Was released on August 5th, 1981. In Japan, and it is the Game & Watch widescreen version of Popeye.
Ooh, I like that. I think I've seen that before. Never played it. But I see, those widescreen, you know, like when TVs went widescreen, like we're all like, oh, cool. But when the Game & Watches went widescreen, it was even better.
Well, it's amazing because it was, you know, it was tiny to begin with. And in fact, I may not have had this one, but I definitely had a Popeye Game & Watch at one point.
I think I might have as well,
Yeah. But so that one turns 40 years old on August 5th. We're going to jump a decade to 1991.
Okay.
August 1st, 1991. So the actual day we're recording this podcast, today is the 30th birthday of, this is the American birthday, not the Japanese birthday, the American birthday of Sin City.
Wow.
The very first Sin City.
Wow. Okay. You talk about like on the computer, right?
This is on the Super Nintendo.
Oh, Super Nintendo version.
Yeah.
Oh, even better, because that's the one I played.
That's the one I played too. And for the life of me, I can never like succeed at that game. Like I never had enough money.
I was gonna say, how do you succeed other than just like unless someone still has their city 30 years later, still going and still prospering?
Well, that's what it was. It was something like that where you needed to have it. Oh, actually, no. August 1st, that was the first release. Period.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, it was. I'm sure there was an end game. There was an end game to it. Like you had to get a certain place. So SimCity is now 30 years old. Cool. And then we're going to jump back to 1986, and this is the Japanese release. So August 6th, 1986 on the Famicom disk system.
Okay.
35 years ago, we are now celebrating Metroid. 35 years of Metroid.
We just talked about it, Metroid.
We just talked about it, Metroid, yeah.
Metroid Dread coming out.
Metroid Dread coming out. And funny enough, well, we always had a delay in the States, but like this one specifically, Metroid came out a year later in the US.
Wow.
We had to wait an entire year before it came out here. Huh. It came out August 15th, 1987 in the US.
So I never...
year and 9 days.
I never played it originally. I remember I wasn't into it. Now I'm mm-hmm. starting to love it, starting to appreciate it, especially now with Metroid Dread getting ready to come out soon.
Yeah.
I've been playing on and off. I haven't really sat down to play for a long time, but on and off, I've been playing Super Metroid recently. Nice. For the Super Nintendo. Yeah, great series. Definitely, mm-hmm. Look, let's face it. Probably one of the first with like that shocking ending. Like, wait a minute, you're a chick? Whoa. You know, like back in the 80s, you know, that blew everyone's mind. So,
yes, you're surprised you're a woman.
So, you know, and Samus Aran is now in the annals of one of the greatest heroes of all time. So, happy birthday, Metroid. I'd like to give I was going to say, I'd like to give a quick one more shout out for another birthday that also, you know, born August 1st, 1981. Died probably about 10 years, 12 years later when Road Rules and the Real World came out. But we were talking retro. Yes. It's 40 years of MTV. And also had an impact on the gaming. MTV has an impact on the gaming world as well.
Yeah, because MTV came out with a bunch of video games. In fact, let me look it up really quickly because I have Sirius XM.
Okay.
And the 80s channel. Is now they're celebrating the 40 years, so they're playing everything from like 1981 that was airing on MTV.
I think they're playing like they're also playing like the music in order that they aired like in the first 2 days or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing.
But
so,
while you're looking that up, not only did MTV have some games, I'm talking about MTV featuring. Like they did a Sega tournament one time on MTV, and some of the games and just cultural references. On MTV, you know, that as much as Nintendo and Genesis, product of the 80s, product of the 90s, and music television, and we're not talking about what MTV is today. We're talking about MTV 30 to 40 years ago. All right, TRL. So we'll go into the, you know, we'll dip into the 90s as well. But, you know, back then, man, it was all about it.
Yeah. And yeah, literally the whole point of MTV was to play music videos.
That's it.
Like just to point that out. That was what it did. They had shows and stuff on it, but they were like all related around music videos.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was it? Club MTV. Do you remember Club MTV?
Yo MTV Raps.
Yo MTV Raps. Just all kinds
remote
of stuff.
Control, pop culture.
Well, I was just gonna say. What was the first MTV video game you remember owning? Because you just mentioned mine. I had Remote Control, which was a game show on MTV that also introduced the world to one Mr. Adam Sandler.
Not only that, Adam Sandler.
Colin Quinn.
Colin Quinn, yep. Who's the host? The host was somebody, too. I can't remember.
Mark something?
No, Mark Summers was Double Dare.
No. Mark something. I said.
Oh. But I'm trying to think. The first MTV game, because I don't think I owned Remote Control. It might have
Ken Ober.
Oh, okay, never mind. I wonder if it was one of the Beavis and Butthead games.
Right. Oh, Dennis Leary. I forgot Dennis Leary was on.
Oh, Dennis Leary was on there. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Wow.
Colin Quinn was the announcer. Ken Ober was the host. And Adam Sandler, Dennis Leary were among the people that came later.
I'm probably going to have to say probably one of the Beavis and Butthead games. I can't think of anything else I might have had before that.
Yeah, I remember playing Beavis and Butthead Do America on my PC.
One of the very I think few I remember PC that too.
That actually yes. played through. Yeah, it was awesome.
So happy birthday to all of that. So
yes.
God, we're old.
Lots of retro birthdays. We are. And Never. It's not going to stop either.
Never. Well, eventually. But with that being said, I think, Ant, do you have anything else you want to talk about or anything?
No, I think I'm set.
Yeah, me too. So let's wrap it up. Ant, where can they find us?
You guys can find us on facebook.com/retrogamerspodcast. You can find us on Instagram at retrogamerspodcast, on Twitter at retrogamerspod. You can listen to us wherever you listen to podcasts and watch us on YouTube and IGTV. And you can email us at email@theretrogamers.com, especially your unpopular opinions, which we will happily air on our show.
Yes, absolutely. And with that, we'll call it a day. Ant, I'm loving the background. Ant, you got to break out that Thank Commodore you. 64 Mini at some point.
I bought it in Italy 3 years ago.
Let it breathe. Let it breathe.
Well, forget about that. I got to break out my Commodore 64, period. I have an original Commodore 64
you do.
Sitting here.
So. You do. And I'm sure there's a way to hook it up to a TV.
Oh, no. It has an AV hookup. Like, I have a wire in there to do AV. So
maybe we'll get that down the road. And maybe a Polymega as well.
I'm looking forward to showing off the Polymega if it ever gets here.
And, folks, we will catch you everywhere next week on the Retro Gamers Podcast.